Chapter 31 On Sparrow Hills. The storm vanished without a trace. In its stead, a multicoloured rainbow arched over all of Moscow, drinking from the Moscow River. High up on a hill, three dark silhouettes stood between two groves. Volant, Kuravyov, and Behemoth sat mounted on black horses and gazed at the city unfolding on the other side of the river, at the broken image of the sun shining in thousands of westward windows, at the gingerbread towers of the Devichy Convent. The air rustled, and as Azello alighted near the waiting group, the master and Margarita flying in the wake of his black cloak.
"It seems I've had to disturb you again, Margarita Nikolaevna, and you, master,"
Volant spoke after a brief silence.
"But I trust you won't hold a grudge. I doubt you'll have cause for complaint." "So then," he said to the master alone, "bid farewell to your city. It is time to go."
Volant pointed his black gauntlet across the river, where countless little suns melted the glass in the window panes, where smog, smoke, and steam rose from the city after a hot day. The master jumped from his saddle, abandoned the riders, and ran to the hillside edge, his black cloak dragging on the ground behind him. The master looked at the city. At first, a nagging sadness crept into his heart, but it was quickly replaced by sweet excitement, a wandering gypsy's thrill. "Forever. That's a lot for a man to grasp," whispered the master, licking his dry, cracked lips. He listened carefully to what was going on in his soul. For a moment, his excitement seemed to turn into a feeling of deep, mortal insult, but the sentiment was fleeting. It vanished to be replaced by proud indifference and finally settled into an expectation of eternal peace. The group of riders waited silently for the master. The group of riders watched the tall, dark, gesticulating figure on the hillside. It would look up one moment, as if trying to see far beyond the edges of the city, and hang its head the next, studying the trampled, wilting grass under its feet. The bored Behemoth broke the silence.
"Maitre,"
he spoke,
"permit me a goodbye whistle before the ride."
"You might frighten the lady,"
Volant replied.
"And besides, don't forget that your antics are over for today."
"Oh no, Messiah," Margarita responded, mounted side saddle like an Amazon, arms akimbo, her sharp train stretching to the ground. "Let him whistle. I feel sad before the long journey. It's natural even when one knows it will end in happiness, isn't it, Messiah? Let him make us laugh, or else I fear there'll be tears and everything will be ruined before the journey." Volant nodded to Behemoth, who livened up immensely and hopped out of his saddle. He placed his fingers in his mouth, puffed up his cheeks, and whistled. Margarita's ears rang, and her horse reared in alarm. Dry twigs rained from the trees in the grove, and flocks of crows and sparrows rose in the air. A column of dust started off towards the river, and they could see that several passengers on a river taxi going past a nearby dock had lost their hats. Behemoth looked round proudly.
"Oh, it was a whistle, I suppose,"
Kurofioff remarked condescendingly.
"A whistle, sure enough, but if one were to speak objectively, it was a very mediocre whistle." "Well, I'm no choirmaster,"
Behemoth replied, puffing up with dignity, and winked suddenly at Margarita.
"Why don't I try one for old time's sake?"
Kurofioff said, rubbing his hands and blowing on his fingers.
"All right, but watch it,"
came Volant's stern voice from his horse. "None of your injurious stunts."
"Trust me, Messiah,"
Kurofioff replied, placing his hand on his heart.
"Just fun, pure fun."
He stretched out, as if made of rubber, and fashioned a complex shape from the fingers of his right hand. coiling up like a spring, he suddenly unwound in a whistle. Margarita did not hear the whistle, but she certainly felt it as she and her fiery steed were thrown some 20 yards to the side. An oak tree nearby was torn out of the earth, and cracks ran along the ground all the way to the riverbank. A huge portion of the riverbank, containing a dock and a restaurant, collapsed into the river. Boiling water shot up, and an entire river taxi was washed onto the low green opposite bank, with completely unharmed passengers still inside. Killed by Fagot's whistle, a jackdaw fell dead at the feet of Margarita's snorting horse. The whistle startled the master. He clutched his head and ran back towards the waiting group.
"Well, then," Voland said to him from high up in the saddle, "are all the accounts settled? Have all the goodbyes been said?"
"Yes, it is over," the master said, calming down, and looked directly into Voland's face without fear. And then Voland's terrible, trumpet-like voice rolled over the hills.
"It is time!"
And was followed by Behemoth's sharp whistle and laughter. The horses blasted off at a gallop, lifting their riders into the air. Margarita felt her wild steed champing and tugging at the bit. Volant's cloak billowed over the entire cavalcade and obscured the evening sky. When the dark shroud blew aside for a moment, Margarita turned and saw that the speckled towers and the turning airplane above were gone, along with the city itself. It had all fallen through the earth, leaving nothing but fog. Chapter 32. Forgiveness and Eternal Refuge.
O gods, ye gods of mine, how sad the earth at night, how strange the swamp mists! He knows it, who has wandered astray in those mists, who has suffered greatly before dying, who has walked the earth carrying an unbearable burden. The weary one knows, and he leaves the earth's mists, swamps, and rivers without regret. He readily gives himself into the hands of death, knowing that it alone can bring him peace. Even the magical black horses grew tired and carried their riders slowly, the inescapable night closing on their heels. Feeling it approach, even the tireless Behemoth grew quiet and rode silently and seriously, clutching the saddle with his claws, his tail ruffled in the wind. The night pulled a dark shawl over the woods and the meadows. The night lit up dismal little lights somewhere far below, alien lights that were no longer of any use or consequence to Margarita or the master. The night overtook the cavalcade, raining white specks of stars on the mournful sky above. The night grew dense as it flew alongside, tearing the riders' cloaks from their shoulders and exposing deceptions. Whenever Margarita opened her eyes as she rode in the cool breeze, she saw all the riders' appearances change as they headed towards their destination. And when a full crimson moon rose above the woods ahead, all the disguises disappeared. The frail magical garments plunged into the swamps below and drowned in the mists. Few would have now recognized Korofiov Fagot, self-appointed interpreter for a mysterious consultant who needed none, in the man who was riding directly beside Volant on Margarita's right. In place of the one who left Sparrow Hills in tattered clown's garb, bearing the name of Korofiov Fagot, a knight in dark violet armour now rode silently, the gold chain of his bridle clinking softly, his face eternally grim and unsmiling. He rested his chin on his chest
and was immersed in thought, gazing neither at the moon above nor at the ground below as he flew next to Volant. "Why has he changed so?" Margarita asked quietly of Volant as the wind whistled by.
"This knight once made an ill-timed joke," Volant replied, turning his silently burning eye towards Margarita. "The pun he made in a conversation about light and darkness was rather unfortunate. As a result, the knight had to spend slightly more time as a joker than he bargained for. But tonight is one of those times when accounts are settled. The knight has paid his dues and closed his account."
The knight stripped off Behemoth's bushy tail and fur, scattering it in clumps over the swamps. He, who used to be a cat entertaining the Prince of Darkness, turned out to be a slim young man, a demon page, the best jester the world had ever seen. He, too, was quiet now as he flew noiselessly through the air, the moonlight washing over his young face. Azazello was flying to the side of everyone else in glittering steel armor. The moon had changed his face as well. The ugly, awkward fang disappeared, and the wall eye turned out to be false. Both his eyes were now alike, empty and black, his face cold and white. Azazello flew on in his true form as the demon of the waterless desert, the killer demon. Margarita could not see herself, but she could clearly see the master change. His hair turned white in the moonlight and gathered in a braid behind his back, flowing in the wind. When the wind blew the master's cloak away from his feet, Margarita could see the stars of his spurs twinkling on his jackboots. Just like the young demon page, the master rode without taking his eyes off the moon. He smiled at it, like at a dear old friend, and muttered to himself from a habit acquired in room number 118. And finally, Volant too flew in his true appearance. Margarita could not say what his bridle was made of. To her it looked like a string of moonlight, the horse itself a lump of darkness, its mane a storm cloud, the rider's spurs white stars. Thus they flew in silence for a long time, until the land below began to change. The gloomy forests sank into the darkness, drawing along the dimly glittering blades of rivers. Large, gleaming boulders appeared below, forming crevices where the moonlight could not reach. Volant reined in his horse on a joyless stone plateau, and the riders moved on at a walk, listening to the flints and rocks crunch under the horse's feet. The moon flooded the ground with bright green light. Further ahead in the deserted surroundings, Margarita soon noticed a chair and the white shape of a man sitting in it. The man appeared deaf, or at least very deep in thought. He did not hear the rocky ground shake under the heavy horses, and the riders approached without disturbing him. The moon helped Margarita see, providing better illumination than any electric light. She witnessed the seemingly blind man rub his hands together briskly and peer at the moon with his unseeing eyes. Now she could also make out an enormous, dark, sharp-eared dog lying at the foot of the heavy stone chair that sparkled in the moonlight. Like his master, the dog was staring anxiously at the moon. Pieces of a broken wine jug lay at the feet of the sitting man amid a never-drying puddle of dark red liquid. The riders stopped their horses.
"Your novel has been read,"
Volant spoke, turning to the master,
"with the only comment being that, unfortunately, it is not finished. And so, I wanted to show you your hero. For around 2,000 years he has sat on this platform and slept, but every full moon he suffers from insomnia. It afflicts both him and his faithful guardian, the dog. If cowardice is the worst of sins, then it seems the dog is not guilty of it. The only thing the brave hound feared was the storm. Well, he who loves must share the fate of the one he loves.
What is he saying? Margarita asked, her perfectly calm face clouding with compassion.
He is saying the same thing over and over, Volant's voice said, that even by the moonlight he has no peace and that he has an unpleasant duty. He says this whenever he is awake, but when he is asleep he dreams of one thing alone, a path made of moonlight. He wants to walk on it and talk to the prisoner Hanotsri. He insists that he was not able to finish his conversation with him on that day long ago, the 14th day of the spring month of Nisan. But alas, he cannot walk on that road for some reason, and no one ever comes, and so he is forced to talk to himself. For variety's sake, he sometimes adds that most of all he despises his own immortality and his unbelievable fame. He says he would gladly trade his life for that of the tattered vagrant Matthew Levi.
12,000 moons for one moon long ago, isn't that a little much? Asked Margarita.
Is the story with Frida about to repeat itself? Said Volant. Don't trouble yourself with this, Margarita. All will be as it should, for that is how the world is built.
Let him go! Margarita suddenly cried in a piercing voice, like she cried when she was a witch. Her cry dislodged a rock somewhere in the mountains, and it went crashing down into the abyss below, filling the mountains with thunder. But Margarita could not tell whether the roaring noise was the rumbling of the rock or a bout of infernal laughter. For Volant was laughing as he looked at Margarita and then said,
"Do not shout in the mountains. He is used to avalanches, and you will not disturb him. You need not plead for him, Margarita, for the one he so wishes to talk to already has."
Volant turned to the master and said,
"Well then, you may conclude your novel with a single phrase."
The master seemed to be waiting for this as he stood motionlessly, gazing at the sitting procurator. He cupped his hands to his mouth and shouted, sending an echo scattering over the deserted, treeless slopes.
"You are free! Free! He awaits you!"
The mountains turned the master's voice to thunder, and the selfsame thunder tore them down. The accursed rocky walls collapsed, leaving only the platform with the stone chair. In the black abyss that remained, a vast, ancient city lit up with golden idols overlooking a garden lush with many thousands of moons' worth of growth. The long-awaited path, made of moonlight, came down into the garden, and the sharp-eared dog was the first to run along it. The man in the white cape with blood-red lining rose from his chair and shouted something in a hoarse, torn voice. It was impossible to make out what he was saying, and whether he was laughing or crying. They could only see him run speedily up the shining path after his faithful guardian. "Am I to follow him?" the master asked anxiously, touching his reins.
"No," Volant replied. "Why chase that which is over?"
"Back there, then?" asked the master, turning and pointing behind him to the hazy image of a recently abandoned city with gingerbread monastery towers with fragmented sunlight in the window panes.
"Also, no,"
Volant said, and his dense voice poured over the cliffs.
"Romantic master, he who your hero so longs to see, the hero you invented and have just freed, has read your novel."
Volant turned to Margarita.
"Margarita Nikolaevna, I fully believe that you tried to think up the best future for the master. But truly, The future I offer you, the future Yeshua has requested for you, is far better. Leave those two alone, Voland said, leaning from his saddle towards the master and pointing after the departed procurator. Let us not interfere. Perhaps they can yet agree on something. Voland waved his hand at Yerushalayim, and it disappeared. Leave that as well, Voland pointed behind him. What will you do in that basement? The broken sun in the window panes extinguished. Why all that? Voland continued softly and persuasively. Oh, thrice romantic master, would you not rather take long walks in a blooming cherry tree alley with your friend and listen to Schubert in the evenings? Would you not rather write by candlelight with a quill pen? Like Faust, would you not rather sit over a retort in the hopes of crafting a new homunculus? That is your destination there. A house awaits you, with an aging servant. The candles are already lit, and will soon extinguish, as dawn inevitably arrives. Take this path, master, and farewell. I must go. Farewell! The master and Margarita cried together. Heeding no road, the black Voland dashed into the rocky abyss, and his entourage came crashing down after him. The rocks, the platform, the path of moonlight, Yerushalayim, none remained. The black horses vanished as well. The master and Margarita saw the promised dawn. It began immediately after the full moon at midnight. In the first rays of morning light, the master and his companion crossed a mossy stone bridge. The faithful lovers put the stream behind them and headed down a sandy path. Listen to the silence, Margarita said to the master, as the sand rustled beneath her bare feet. Listen and enjoy that which you never had in life. Silence. Look at your eternal home up ahead, your reward. I can already see the Venetian window and the twisting grapevines rising to the very roof. It is your home, your eternal home. I know that, come evening, you will be visited by those you love, those who intrigue you and who will never trouble you. They will play for you and sing for you, and you will see what a candle-lit room looks like. You will fall asleep in your dirty, eternal nightcap, and you will sleep with a smile on your face. Your sleep will strengthen you and inspire you to wise thoughts. And you won't be able to chase me away anymore. It is I who will guard your sleep. Thus spoke Margarita as they approached their eternal home, and it seemed to the master that her words were flowing in his ears like the whispering stream they left behind. And the master's troubled, needling memories began to fade. Someone was setting him free, just as he himself had just released his hero. This hero vanished into the void, vanished forever, forgiven on a Sunday night, the son of an astrologer king, the cruel fifth procurator of Judea, the knight Pontius Pilate.